As a CEO or entrepreneurial leader, you want to focus on overall vision, alignment, and running a great business. You want your business to run efficiently, with less effort and little pain. Welcome to Operationally Speaking with Sergio Samel. Sergio and his very special guests will give you the tools to run your business well and gain the momentum to break through to the next level. Now, here is your host, Sergio Samel.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to episode number 19 of Operationally Speaking, a show exclusively dedicated to the art and science of operating entrepreneurial businesses. I am Sergio Samel, your host, and I'm the principal EOS implementer at Get Business Momentum, where we help owners and CEOs of small to mid-sized entrepreneurial companies like yours get what you want out of your business by implementing a well-proven, complete system for operating your company. Last week, I spent this time with Michael Gerber, author of the E-Myth series, including his latest Beyond the E-Myth, and creator of the Dreaming Room. Michael and I had an extraordinary conversation about the nature of entrepreneurial businesses, about the absolute requirement that all business owners and leaders work on their business and on as if they were planning on putting them up for sale, and the reality that few, if any, ever do it or do it well. If you missed that extraordinary episode, you can listen to it on demand here on the Voice America Business Channel, as well as wherever you listen to podcasts, such as on iTunes and Stitcher. And now, let me introduce my great guest today, Robert Scher. Robert, you are the founding principal of CEO to CEO, a consulting firm of former chief executives that improves the leadership infrastructure of mid-sized companies seeking to accelerate their performance. You have published extensively on the successful leadership traits and skills of CEOs of mid-sized companies and are a regular columnist for Forbes.com. You have authored two books, The Feel of the Deal, How I Built a Company Through Acquisitions in 2007, and Mighty Midsize Companies, How Leaders Overcome Seven Silent Growth Killers in 2014. You were chief executive of Bentley Publishing Group from 1984 to 2006 and steered the firm to become a leading player in its industry, which is decorative art publishing. At Bentley, you led the acquisition of four competitors between 1999 and 2004, and the firm finally merged with Global Arts in 2011 to form Bentley Global Art Group. So welcome to the show, Robert.
Thank you so much. My background sounds so much impressive, so much more impressive with your voice, I must say.
Well, I'm glad I reproduced it very well. Obviously, I was not even daring to make anything up. So just for kind of a context setting here, you know, I'm always interested in, you know, what actually makes people become what they become ultimately in life. So I want to ask you the same question I ask everybody, and, you know, not just people who come to the show, but everybody that I meet out and about. So think about maybe there was an event or force or maybe even a person in the early stages of your life that has had the strongest influence on you becoming who you are today. What would that be?
It's hard to pick one, but, you know, the first person that jumps to mind is Mr. Rutherford. And I called him that because he was my journalism teacher in high school. And it was really the first time, you know, someone outside of the family gave me a chance to lead and become editor of the school newspaper and freedom to run an organization. He was an inspirational leader and gave me the gift of learning to be a confident writer, which has paid dividends in many, many ways over my life.
Isn't that interesting how, you know, things that may not even cross your mind when you are, I don't know how old you were, but, you know, let's say in your early teens, right, all of a sudden become sort of like the driving force of your life, or at least your professional life, right?
Exactly. You never know.
Absolutely. So tell us just a little bit about CEO to CEO. So what its purpose is and what is it best at, and maybe even where do you see it in, let's say, 3 years from now?
Sure. Well, you know, what we do is we help mid-sized businesses keep growing through that difficult sort of teenage years, which is mid-size. And it's challenging. Starting a business is challenging, but then when it starts to get more arms and legs and requires a team and requires more process, it's a difficult time. And many of us entrepreneurs don't know how to build that process. And in fact, many people that have worked in huge organizations have seen leadership process and leadership infrastructure at scale, but don't know how to construct it in just the right amount. And so that's what we do. We coach CEOs and business leaders, C-suite leaders, through that process in a whole variety of ways. Business planning, the human side of it, strategic planning, and so forth.
So if you were to pick one thing that you would say that your firm is the absolute best at, what would that be?
You know, I would have to say it's about helping organizations create clarity and drive it down through the organization so that everyone knows who does what by when.
Oh, I love this. As you, of course, know, we've talked a little bit before this show. You and I do kind of, let's say, cousin kinds of activities in our respective practices. Mm-hmm. Me as a implementer of the entrepreneurial operating system to small to medium-sized businesses, and you as what you just described. So, which brings me actually to the topic of our talk today, of our conversation today. We chose this, in fact, you proposed this very cool title, which was "My Boss Sucks at Accountability. Now What?" So, we'll talk about bosses and we'll talk about sucking at stuff in just a minute. But let's start with the basics, Robert. So everybody talks about accountability. In fact, you know, it's actually one of the central words or terms in the entrepreneurial operating system, or EOS, one of the major central tools that we use. It's something we call the accountability chart. So what is accountability?
You know, accountability is the likelihood or the act of delivering on what you promised, right? You know, if we have to get the business from here to there and tasks and responsibilities are assigned, you know, accountability means that those people that raised their hand and said, "I'll do it," actually do it in the time frame that was anticipated and promised.
I mean, is it just about keeping your word, or is it also sort of delivering of what you are supposed to do, given some description of the seat that you sit in within the organizational structure?
You know, it's an interesting discussion, and there's probably different ways of looking at it. Is doing your job mm-hmm. accountability, or is accountability delivering on what you've promised? And whether it's a specific element of your job or a specific promise is an interesting story. Right. I think too often, honestly, people use the word accountability to mean do your job.
Right.
But you know, there's a lot of other ways that we get our job done and that we as leaders create environments to get the job done. And accountability is one of those ways. But I think, you know, this lies at the heart of why sometimes we don't get accountability and maybe don't even get the job done either.
Well, yes, indeed. And, you know, so in my world, when I work with my clients implementing EOS or the Entrepreneurial Operating System, and we actually create this this structure called accountability chart, which is literally a design of the organizational structure where we actually clearly define what are the top five or so roles and responsibilities for each function within the structure. You know, the accountability becomes, in a sense, that thing that you just said, which is, you know, doing your job. Say, for example, accomplishing, you know, quarterly goals, which we call rocks, then it becomes essentially you delivering of what you actually promised your team, say, for example, the leadership team, that your area of responsibility will actually get done. So obviously there's an accountability problem, because otherwise we wouldn't be talking about it. If everybody was fully bought in and fully accountable, then you and I will have nothing to talk about. So what do you see as the accountability problem in mid-sized companies, which is sort of like your sweet spot?
Right. Well, you know, it involves teams, right? So in mid-size, you can't really grow and succeed unless you've got a team of leaders driving that through. And what often happens, and what I see most often, is that the team looks to the CEO to hold everyone accountable. The CEO should get everyone to do that. And most CEOs I know are nice. They are not, you know, dictators, right? And so they find it uncomfortable to put pressure on people and hold them accountable and holler at them and so on. And so in many, many cases, they don't, or they don't do it enough. And once the top team smells that the CEO is so hesitant to do it, maybe doesn't like conflict at all, some of those team members don't deliver. And it leaves the other team members very, very frustrated. And as a result, they sit around the table and, you know, shrug their shoulders. Gee, we didn't get it done. Oh, well, but there's no consequence to it that they perceive. Of course, there's a consequence for the business. And sometimes, you know, the CEO thinks everything's fine. And many businesses roll along just fine without getting all kinds of new things accomplished. But in other cases, you know, things are really falling apart, that things really need attention. And both are a big problem for a mid-sized business that's trying to grow.
So is the lack of accountability kind of the root cause of that? Is that literally a failure of management?
It's a failure of leadership first and management second. I think there's both elements in it.
Okay. Can you expand a little bit?
Yes.
We have just a minute or so before we take a break, but let's just get started on that.
Certainly. So in order to have a team being accountable, of course, there has to be clarity and people have to know what's done when, and there has to be planning and details and project management, all of those kinds of things. But getting a group of humans to really, in their heart and soul, demand of themselves the accomplishment of that which they promised and that which the organization really needs, that's a leadership issue. And right. That is, there's two parts to this problem.
Exactly. And is that something that's present only at the top, or is it actually literally trickling down all the way to the bottom part of the mid-sized company?
I think it trickles all the way down to the bottom of the management chain, which could even be supervisors. At some level, people are told what to do, and they're just supposed to do it. So, but where we focus is mostly on leadership, and frankly, it all starts at the top, right? It all starts as the leadership group.
I couldn't agree more, Robert. So let's take a couple of minutes of a break, and when we come back, let's actually start talking a little bit about how do we actually try to improve this area of accountability. So don't go away, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Would you like to turn your entrepreneurial organization into a well-oiled machine that runs efficiently with less effort and little pain, so your good business becomes great and you can stop putting out today's fires and focus on its future instead? Serge Samel, our host, helps business owners and CEOs get what they want out of their business by working with their leadership team to implement a complete, highly proven suite of tools and processes. This system for operating your business gets everybody 100% 100% on the same page as to where the business is going and how it will get there. Gets everybody more disciplined and more accountable so that everybody becomes a master of execution, gaining momentum towards your vision, and gets everybody to function as part of cohesive, healthy teams. To find out whether this is for you, contact Sergio at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Again, that's os@getbusinessmomentum.com or directly at 1-617-731-3132.
Tune in to The Soul of Enterprise, Business in the Knowledge Economy, with co-hosts Ron Baker and Ed Kless. Ron and Ed will show you how to recognize that wealth is created by intellectual capital. It's all in the possibilities that we can create and that are created for us. These possibilities are destined to be discovered by human imagination and through the service of others, creating a brighter future for all of us. The Soul of Enterprise is heard live every Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Business Channel, and simulcast at the same time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now. Toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
This is Operationally Speaking. To reach Sergio Semel, if you have a question or comment about the program, please send an email to os@getbusinessmomentum.com. That's os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Now, back to this week's program.
This is Sergio Semel, your host, and I'm sitting here with Robert Scher, founder of CEO to CEO. So before the break, Robert, we were talking about accountability. So let's dig deeper a little bit and start talking about how to improve accountability. So what do you see around the companies that you are serving where leaders are trying to improve accountability? What is it that they're trying to do and how do they do it?
So I'll give you two approaches I see most often that don't quite get us there. One is the CEO who knows he or she should be stronger and says, you know, I'll do it this time. I'm gonna definitely put my foot down and so on and so forth. And gosh, I admire that for people that are uncomfortable with it. But most of the time, even if they do it once, it doesn't persist. And to change an organization, there has to be persistent new behaviors. The other thing I see often is, and this is a part of the solution, but it's not all of it, is an effort to create great clarity, very specific plans, what each person's supposed to do in great detail, so that there's no way anyone can say, oh, goodness, I didn't realize, or oh, I forgot, or any of that sort of thing. It's a lot of detailed planning. And while that can help, too often, again, it seems to fall short because someone misses even a written deadline and you get the shoulder shrugging and so on and so forth. And so, you know, what I like to see is kind of a different approach. And it really has to do with a lot more work up front about bringing a team together and making them accountable to each other. I'm talking peer pressure here. And much as, you know, maybe that's a bad thing, but peer pressure is really, really powerful. And granted, it's not the only kind of pressure to perform, right? We can have incentives and punishments and exposure and all kinds of things. But one type of pressure to perform is peer pressure. And so I'm going to kind of walk through how a company can really make that work and make that leverage.
I'm all ears.
Yeah, okay. And the first thing is to make sure that you're actually working with a team and not a group. And there is a big difference. You know, a group is a bunch of people that may happen to work in the same building. And that's very different than a team who has their eyes focused on delivering something. And it could be business growth, but everyone in the team knows they have a role to play. And everyone in the team is required to do their part to get the company where it needs to go, right? And I can't tell you how many mid-sized companies have what you might look at and say, well, that's the C-suite, but it's really six silos with the CEO telling each person what to do, and they do it on their own, and there's very few cross-functional teams, or if there is, they're barely connected. And when you bring those people together and you say, well, gosh, aren't you upset that Sue didn't do her part and Joe didn't do his part? They're like, well, but I did my part. Right. And they really don't, they haven't bought in the way the team of soccer players have bought in, right? Everyone knows every person has to play their part. And so that's the first thing is, are we really on a team? And is the team bonded and identify itself as the people who are going to get that piece accomplished? Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I use a metaphor that was you were just starting to get into that. I call this on a continuum. On one end, you have what amounts to a basketball type of team where you have these five people that are totally integrated, mm-hmm. totally on the same page, totally keeping an eye on each other, totally being able to predict where the other one is going, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the one end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. And then on the other end of the spectrum, and we use the same term called team, is a golf team. Well, you know, right. I mean, what the golf team just gets together after the golf play for drinks, and then all they do is to just add up the scores, right?
Right.
So, and I remind people that, you know, we may call that a team, but it's really not a team. Like you said very, very aptly, it's really just a group of people who happen to be basically having drinks together and adding up, seven numbers or whatever they are.
Exactly. You know, it's funny. I was doing an offsite trying to really drive this point home. And, you know, this leadership team had a couple of different versions of varieties, but one person who was driving sales, you know, kept saying, well, you know, for a team, you'd have to have a common goal. And, you know, we don't have that common goal here. And what's our project? What are we trying to accomplish? And finally, the CEO said, look, we're trying to take the company from 20 million to 40 million. That's our project.
Exactly.
And you have a role. But it hadn't quite dawned on them that way. And so sometimes there is a team, but they don't think of themselves that way. And other times, they aren't really a team. They're just people doing different work, and trying to get them to be accountable to each other in that case flat won't work. So that All right. teamwork is really, really crucial.
So what's the next step after they've kind of accepted or dawned on them that they're actually part of the team? What's the next step for them to start being holding each other accountable?
Right. And it has to be that they trust each other enough to be vulnerable with each other. If it's a team, but each team member is out to knock the other one back, or somebody's trying to become the captain of the team, and they don't trust that they're really all in it together, and that if they get in trouble with the ball, right, and they're under pressure, that they can pass it to a teammate who is happy to help, right, get it there, mm-hmm. that's the next step. And, you know, I don't know if it's just us Americans, right? We often don't share a lot, and there's a lot that's private and this and that. And this means, you know, when a team really builds trust, that we have to open up to each other. We have to actually know enough to care about each other, right? We have to, in some respects, have put our toe in the water and said, okay, I'll ask for a little help on something small, maybe. And if they're really helpful and it comes back, well, I guess I can do that kind of thing. And if I make a mistake, I don't have two other team members trying to, you know, pin it on me, right? Like it's a win of some sort. They say, oh, hey, well, how can we help you recover from that mistake? Trust precedes helping. And what great teams do is they help each other.
Right.
And that's what I'm calling trust.
And so how do you develop trust in a team? So what, I mean, do you take them through a set of exercises? What's your method of actually increasing the trust level of a team?
So there's a couple of things, and it depends where they start from. Some teams haven't bonded well, but there's no internal animosity. Other teams, there are some couple of people who hate each other, who have maybe proven that trust isn't safe, at least in the past. Mm-hmm. So it really depends. Part of it is spending more time building relationships, sharing things with each other and so on. And look, in some organizations, especially engineering organizations with a lot of quiet, introverted people, just putting in the time and doing that uncomfortable work of getting to know each other is a powerful. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have someone on a team that doesn't want to play though by those rules. They're hyper-competitive. They don't care about the damage that they might wield. And sometimes those people have to get removed, and it's not comfortable. Because if you leave one of those people on a team, they'll breach it all. Because after all, if I'm looking out for all my teammates, but one of my teammates is only looking out for themselves, then I'm going to say, well, wait a minute, they're not looking out for me. Maybe I need to look out for me on my own, right? There is an element where, players that don't want to be on a team like this do have to get removed. But those are two approaches that help build and develop trust.
As a matter of fact, in my own practice, Robert, we actually once a year when we do a 2-day yearly planning session with the leadership team, we actually explicitly go through a couple of what I call trust builder exercises. And they're part actually of the entire process of implementing EOS into a building and into a business. And, you know, it starts obviously with the leadership team, which is the one that I'm dealing with. And then, you know, I coach the leaders to actually do the same thing with the next level down and so forth. And one of the simplest trust builders is to actually ask a bunch of questions and have people go around the table and share stuff about their lives, but very, you know, some of those things may be, you know, a little, kind of superficial, and others may be a little touchy. So, for example, this is a kind of a mild stuff to do because we're not asking people to start sharing all kinds of intimate details about their life. But right. but we are asking. I would ask them a question like, say, so one thing that you basically hated about being in high school, or for example, what's the best job that you've ever had, and what's the worst job that you've ever had, mm-hmm. and why? And, you know, slowly, like you said, slowly in small baby steps, people start learning about each other. And I agree with you. Obviously I wasn't born or raised in this country. I came here as a young adult, but about 37 years ago. So I do carry with me some European, piece of my own internal culture. But you are right that there is perhaps something about North America that makes people very, very, kind of uncomfortable with sharing stuff about their lives. Not everybody, but a lot of people. And we have to actually help them, have the leadership team, kind of get over that. Because otherwise, as you said, without trust, almost nothing works, right?
Right. Well, the one piece I'll add is that trust is earned. And that's the job of a coach or the CEO, the leader who's coaching his or her own team. People have to realize you can do all the exercises you want, but if when your buddy needs help, you're not there, or worse yet, you throw any salt in that wound, you will destroy trust dramatically. And so, hey, demonstrate that you're there for your team over and over again, and you start to cement trust very, very quickly.
Oh, my God. That's so, so true. I love this point you just made, Robert. I mean, it's really essential because, yes, you're absolutely right. We can play all kinds of trust-building games, but at the end of the day, it's the actions that count, not the words, right?
That's right. So should we go on and talk about the next thing, which is fun? This is the most fun one. It's conflict.
Well, Well, yes, I'm glad that you brought it up. We are going to take a couple minutes of break. When we come back, you and I are going to be into a big conflict. No, I'm just joking. We'll be actually tackling that fun part. So let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Sounds great.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Would you like to turn your entrepreneurial organization into a well-oiled machine that runs efficiently with less effort and little pain so your good business becomes great and you can stop putting out today's fires and focus on its future instead? Serge Samel, our host, helps business owners and CEOs get what they want out of their business by working with their leadership team to implement a complete, highly proven suite of tools and processes. This system for operating your business gets everybody 100% on the same page as to where the business is going and how it will get there. Gets everybody more disciplined and more accountable so that everybody becomes a master of execution, gaining momentum towards your vision, and gets everybody to function as part of cohesive, healthy teams. To find out whether this is for you, contact Sergio at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Again, that's os@getbusinessmomentum.com or directly at 1-617-731-3132.
How is your work-life balance? In most businesses, no matter where you are positioned, there is always room for improvement. If you're an executive, learn insight about your business. Are you an employee? Learn how to better work with your team. Even if you're not in business, you can learn where your strengths and weaknesses can be played to their best potential. The Work-Life Balance with host Rick Morris can be heard live every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be.
Listen anywhere.
Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
This is Operationally Speaking. To reach Sergio Samel, if you have a question or comment about the program, please send an email to os@getbusinessmomentum.com. That's os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Now, back to this week's program.
This is Sergio Samel, your host, and I'm sitting here with Robert Scher, founder of CEO to CEO. So, Robert, before the break, we spoke about accountability and its fundamental foundation, which is trust. So you kind of open up the kimono right at the end and said, well, the next one is really the fun one, which is conflict. So hit me. Tell me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's funny. A lot of times people like to sit around a table and somebody tosses out an idea. Usually the CEO goes first and it seems like everybody's on board because everybody's kind of silent and they're nodding and any discussion. And too often there's just not enough. And, you know, that doesn't mean everyone's on board. There's this weird thing that humans bring, all humans, is that they've got to feel like they've chewed on an idea and they've argued a little bit and fought about something. And when there's been a good amount of pushing and shoving, whether we humans get tired and therefore we're ready to move forward, or whether it's just a way that we all process, I'm not sure. I'm no psychologist. But a critical step to getting a team to really own something is that they have some conflict. And by conflict, I don't mean like screaming and yelling, right? Although my Eastern European friends are better than that, than Americans for sure, right? Sergey, you know, my first client ever, boy, I sat down and they were just screaming at each other, and I thought it was a complete failure, and they were Eastern European. And then as soon as it was done, they went out and had a beer and they were best of friends again. I was like, that was very interesting. But in this country, generally, conflict doesn't have to be that way. There's a whole continuum of constructive, positive conflict. And of course, there can be negative, damaging conflict as well. But with enough conflict, you get the best ideas, because problems for mid-sized businesses are just that complicated. You need 3 and 4 and 5 brains and a little bit of pushing and shoving to really get there. And when everyone gets to put their 2 bits in, even though they might not get their way, because I'm not talking about consensus,
of course,
people are more willing to drive forward.
So by the way, speaking about conflict, one thing that I've learned, and of course I share this with all my clients, is that, you know, one basic thing of avoiding destructive conflict and kind of creating constructive conflict is that it is okay to attack an idea, a point of view, and it's never okay to attack a person. So as long as you can actually clearly separate these two in your mind and always basically deal with a point or an idea or a thought and criticize it as being bad and make sure that you're not really attacking the person, him or herself, then, you know, on the receiving end, somebody can actually do something with that. The moment you start shifting that towards the person, that's when the destruction actually starts happening. Right.
Absolutely true. And conflict doesn't have to be with raised voices, and it doesn't have to be fast. And so there's plenty of time to think about my perspective on a challenge and for you to debate those points. In fact, both my kids went through high school debating and speech making. And you see there's rules, right? People have to prepare for that debate. They rally their arguments. There's time limits. It's a very orderly process. But you can see how one idea hammers on another. It doesn't have to be that organized, of course, but that's the kind of outlook that we're looking for. And what's interesting is most of us are afraid that conflict is going to go from being constructive and then we're going to accidentally spill over. Somebody will get mad, or somebody will feel insulted, or someone will say, "Sergey, how could you say that? You of all people, oops, right? Stepped over that line a little bit." But if the team is well bonded, if the team really trusts each other, if the team is willing to admit when they've made a mistake, then guess what? They can recover from that. Say, "You know, I'm sorry. I was out of line. I went too far. I apologize." But if you can get the level of conflict to where we're really beating up those important critical ideas as hard as we can, right up to the edge of being destructive, we're going to get not only the best ideas, but we're going to get solid buy-in for people who are willing to then say, "Okay, let's make it happen."
So we are engaging in conflict. We are calmly attacking each other's points of view. We are not crossing the lines. So, but why? What are you trying to get in that team context out of all this conflict? Why even go there?
Because we're going to need it. This is really a team, and every team member needs to deliver their part. We have to have them making their own personal decision that they are going to drive to success, that they're going to commit to the results that the team needs. And if someone's sitting there quietly thinking, "Oh, I think this is stupid, you know, they don't understand my perspective," and they never engage, then when we all say, "Okay, so we're going to go north," they're saying, "Oh, it's just so stupid." But they're not saying it. They didn't have any hand, didn't have a hand in it. Whereas when they would have, in another scenario, articulated the reasons why they thought going north was so stupid, and they heard real responses as to why, and they were asked, "Well, would you go south then, or west, or east?" And they couldn't come up with a really good, solid reason, and maybe they chuckled, they realized it. Said, "Well, you know what, when I was really pressed, I couldn't come up with a better direction to go in." That person then is more likely to say, "Well, I'm still nervous about it, but fine, let's do it. Let's see how it rolls."
So do you have a maybe a quick example of a recent client type of interaction where that actually got kind of revealed in a sense, or you had to actually deal with it as their coach?
Where someone sort of didn't really commit all the way.
Yes.
Yeah, the one that comes to mind was a team that struggled with commitment. They actually would have some conflict, but they would never finish it because the CEO would overheat too quickly, and you could just see him start to vibrate. And then when he was not at his best, he would explode, and that would end things. Or when he was better, he would end the discussion, because if it went any further, he would explode. And so we'd get things that were half argued and half done. And then he'd come back and say, well, we got to do X. And he would kind of pick it. But then the other leaders, who were all very strong and all very smart — this wasn't one smart guy and a bunch of, you know, rookies, they were all very smart — would just not do it. They'd say, we didn't finish the discussion, or I've been swamped for 2 months. And then we find ourselves 3 months later, let's really have the debate now. Except 3 months would have gone by and people would be more frustrated. And this repeated itself over and over again because they couldn't finish that debate. Everyone didn't really get their thoughts out and then commit.
So have they ever corrected this issue?
They struggled with it for 2 to 3 years. And I have to say, we don't work with them anymore. They never really got there. They didn't get there. And
sometimes it's tough.
Yes, what we're talking about is not easy. It sounds simple. Just do this, then do this. And Sergey and Rob, they talked about it. But it takes courage, and it Absolutely. Takes people willing to change their behaviors in order to get there. And so it's challenging.
Absolutely. So, all right. So we got commitment. So that sounds pretty, important and kind of an ideal. Everybody's committed to that. But, at the end of the day, business is not really succeeding on commitment. It succeeds on action. So how do you turn that into action?
Well, with some detailed planning work. I call it, does everyone know who will do what by when? And so you sit down with that team and say, we all decided in 9 months we were going to deliver this project or make this happen. Sergey, so you run IT. What is your part in this? And let's really sit down and you break it down into multiple steps, right? Using your nomenclature there, rocks and pebbles and so on and so forth, to where we've really done a little bit of project planning. We've really looked at it. We've looked at all 5 team members, specific written chunks of work, right? Actions, maybe specific measurables about progress. We've broken it out. We've sat down and we laid them all back together. And we've said, if everyone does their part, is nothing been forgotten? Are we going to get there? The system I love to use is called the one-page business planning system. And very similar in that you take the overall project plan and you break it out. And you have to do that. And then you have to play the movie of the future to say, month one, Sergey does his part. Johnny does his part. Sue does her part. Good. Are we good? Good. Month two, and so on and so forth. So we lay that out, and then we go back once it's done and once everyone says, yes, I understand it, I've got the resources, I've double-checked all that, then every single month or week period, whatever the interval is to check, we're going to make sure with a status update that everybody has gotten where they're supposed to. So this is fairly detailed work here. This is not high fluffy stuff. This is very detailed. And when it hasn't, I'll pick on you and Sergey, you've missed this intermediate deadline. Hey, Sergey, how can we help? Were you short on people? Can I loan you a body? What fell down and how do we get you back on track? Because you know what? If we all finish but you don't, we're still hosed. It's still not going to work. It's that kind of clarity that allows us to then have a team that can hold each other accountable.
So typically, how long does it take to construct this kind of a plan for, an average leadership team of a mid-sized company that you work with?
So if I'm doing this for the whole company, it's 4 to 6 weeks time, and that's not 100% time. It could be as little as 8 hours per executive because, you know, largely we know what we're doing, right? We know most of what we do. And so writing it down, making it crisp, and it takes less time once they've done it a few times. And then there's usually a few things. It's a few things that require some pretty serious debates and prioritizing. That can take a little bit more time, but it's not that complicated. It's just a matter of having the discipline to actually do it and lay those things out, and it makes all the difference in the world.
So we're about to take another quick break, and when we come back, we want to talk about, well, what happens next. So don't go away, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Would you like to turn your entrepreneurial organization into a well-oiled machine that runs efficiently with less effort and little pain, so your good business becomes great and you can stop putting out today's fires and focus on its future instead? Serge Samel, our host, helps business owners and CEOs get what they want out of their business by working with their leadership team to implement a complete, highly proven suite of tools and processes. This system for operating your business gets everybody 100% on the same page as to where the business is going and how it will get there. Gets everybody more disciplined and more accountable so that everybody becomes a master of execution, gaining momentum towards your vision, and gets everybody to function as part of cohesive, healthy teams. To find out whether this is for you, contact Sergio at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Again, that's os@getbusinessmomentum.com or directly at 1-617-731-3132.
If you're looking for an in-depth, thought-provoking discussion about leadership, tune in to Bernard E. Robinson's The Leadership Forum, Making an Impact Through Effective Leadership. Each program provides an intelligent, conversational experience about leadership from Bernard, his guests, and you. If you're interested in improving the quality of leadership in your organization, listen live every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time and 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Leadership Forum on the Voice America Business Channel.
Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
This is Operationally Speaking. To reach Serge Samel, if you have a question or comment about the program, please send an email to os@getbusinessmomentum.com. That's os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Now, back to this week's program.
This is Serge Samel, your host, and I'm sitting here with Robert Scher, founder of CEO to CEO. So, Robert, right before the break, we were talking about this whole operational planning. But before I ask you the question of then what next, what is coming out of that, I have actually another question for you just to make a little bit of, to bring a little bit of levity here. So, you know, I mean, if somebody made a movie about your life, what would it be called?
Oh, my goodness. I'm not sure there's enough there for a movie. You know, it would be something like Keep on Trucking. I envisioned as a young man how awesomely successful I would be right out of the get-go, but it was never that easy. And I found life just isn't easy. And I am a persistent animal. I just keep on moving and keep on trying something new and cranking. And people that know me know that, you know, you just keep on moving forward. And with that attitude, you make an amazing amount of progress when you look back over time. Never instant progress. I wish it never happens, but that's what it would be. Keep on trucking.
Yeah, wonderful. I love it. I love it. So we were talking about, you know, operational planning, documenting all these details, you know, those 4 to 6 weeks that you talked about. Mm-hmm. So what comes next out of it? So, well, I think I know where you're heading, but out of that thing emerges what, Robert?
So what has to happen is when that team comes together and they're doing that check-in on progress, the team has to have the courage to hold each other accountable. And I don't mean by saying, hey, Sergey, how could you have missed that deadline? You're a jerk. No, it's by saying, how can I help? But that little call out of saying, somebody missed, we got to come around and help them, that has to happen. If the team sits silent there, hoping that the boss will do it, it fails. And so we all have to go to that meeting. When everyone goes to the meeting knowing that your peers, who you are committed to supporting because you trust them and they've helped you, that everyone, if you've missed, will be there to help and that it will be talked about and discussed. That pressure is excruciating and gets people to focus on doing the right things. And I never mean it as nasty pressure, but that's incredible. Now, I got to say one other thing, that the team has to believe that in the end, the boss, if pushed, will make that same comment and will be there. If everyone knows that the boss will never hold anyone accountable, this all breaks down as well. But if a boss can do it just enough and the team is well bonded, then the team, then the team will do most of the heavy lifting on accountability, and the boss, remember those nice guys that don't like to do it, will have to do much less. But you've got to start up front and build trust and build all the other elements we talked about if you really want that to happen. But it's a beautiful thing when it actually does happen.
Go ahead.
One other point I want to make, and there's so many executives who aren't the CEO who won't find their boss doing that. And the question is, what do they do? What do you do when your boss sucks at accountability? And I'll say a couple of things. One is that, hey, you know what? Most of us leaders who aren't the boss have other people reporting to us. And it doesn't mean that we can't get this same kind of trust and accountability process running in our own teams. That's at least worth something. That will develop your people. It'll get your work done to a much higher degree and make your life so much easier. Secondarily, usually in a leadership team, there's at least two or three people, maybe not everyone, but two or three, that want to work in this kind of a high-performance environment. And so there may be some projects that you do with them where you can use this kind of peer accountability, peer pressure to develop higher results. So those are two possible workarounds I've seen work many times.
But what do you do actually, speaking about, the boss sucking at accountability, is there any way to actually kind of embrace the boss, let's call him or her a CEO, and actually help them get better at accountability?
Yes. So one is if they start to understand what we've talked about, hey, play this recording for them, and they understand it enough and are willing to participate, and they allow the team to go through the process. And if the team is largely amenable to it, remember, if there's some jerks in the team that are going to bite other folks, that's never going to work. But sometimes if the boss understands it and the team wants to see it happen, they can start to see that this is an easier path to get results than them having to puff up and resolve to be the tough guy. And so that can help. But I got to tell you, Sergey, much as I wish this would always work, there are some people, some bosses who are so afraid of any conflict that they're never going to come around. And if you work for that boss and you want the thrill of being on a high performance, highly accountable team, you might have to change companies.
Exactly. So, Robert, we're getting closer to the end of our show, but I'd like to offer you the opportunity to give our listeners a gift. And that is, by giving them like two quick recommendations, a book and an app. What are your favorites?
A book and an app.
Just a minute.
Sure. Well, so I'm reading one right now that I'm really enjoying. It's called The New Leadership Literacies by a futurist named Bob Johansson. It'll stretch your mind very far out, but it's a second book that I've read, at least, very, very interesting about what is leadership going to look like 10 years plus from now. Mm-hmm. for an app, goodness, it's Johnson & Johnson's 7-Minute Workout. I don't ever have enough time. It's a great app. I've used it now 40 times. It's quick and helps you stay healthy so you can do all the other fun things in your life.
Exactly. So if people want to reach out to you about leadership, about accountability maybe, or anything else, what's the best way, Robert?
Go to my website, www.ceotoceo.biz. From there, there's contact information. There's hundreds of articles, links to the books and so on. But that's the easiest way to reach me. Just go to that website and take it from there.
Absolutely. And well, thank you so much, Robert, for being my guest here. And thank you, our listeners, for spending this precious hour with us. If you found what you heard on this show helpful, point your business friends and colleagues to Operationally Speaking. As a matter of fact, point everybody to Operationally Speaking. And if you listen to us on our webpage at voiceamerica.com, don't hesitate to click on the banners to get your free consultation on how to turn your own business vision into reality right now and here. Or send me a request at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. That is os@getbusinessmomentum.com. You will be surprised by what's possible, and I promise you'll never regret it. So see you again next Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern or 12 noon Pacific. And until then, make it an operationally sound and happy week. Goodbye.
Thank you for tuning in to Operationally Speaking. Be sure to join your host, Sergio Semel, for another great program 1 week from today. We're live every Friday at 12 noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. In the meantime, you can reach Sergio for additional questions at 1-617-731-3132 or by email at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Again, that is os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Enjoy your upcoming weekend, and may you and your business make it a smooth and successful week.